an account to settle. So this was the situation as the Gita was about to begin. Arjuna had a long account to settle with his cousins. From the childhood onwards, there were so many occasions when he would have got even with Duryodhana. But his mother would not allow it, nor would his elder brother. The incident involving Draupadi was the final insult. He, therefore, wanted to teach all the Dhritarashtras a lesson. All the weapons he had been stockpiling for this day were going to have a chance to express themselves. These were not simple arrows, they were a different type of weaponry. They were all missiles. One came emitting fire, like a napalm bomb. Another one had the ability to neutralize it by dousing it with water. With such missiles, what a fight it would be. Elaborate descriptions of these weapons and missiles are found in the pages of Mahabharata. Arjuna's magnificent weapons had been stockpiled in anticipation of an appropriate occasion in which they could be used. The war of Dharma, justice, which was about to begin, was just such an occasion. More often than not, war is due to injustice on both sides. Here, adharma, injustice, was on one side only. When a warrior fights for dharma, all his weapons and skills become useful. They come alive and are not wasted. The warrior will not think he spent his life simply gathering weaponry that was never used. A warrior who does not have an opportunity to fight, having spent 50 or 60 years stockpiling weapons, may develop arthritis and wish he had studied geology instead. He will regret what he has done because he has no proof of his valor. Therefore, for Kshatriya like Arjuna, it was a great day to prove himself. He was a prince who had been nursing a lot of hurts and injustices. For him, the D-Day had come. Having waited so long for this day, Arjuna was naturally one flame of fury. He ordered Krishna to position his chariot in such a way that he could see all those with whom he would be fighting. Arjuna could not have fought with ordinary soldiers. He had to determine which chieftains he must tackle, which ones were his equals. As a good driver, Krishna replied, "Yes, sir," and placed the chariot where Arjuna could see all the sights. Arjuna's grief. When Arjuna looked around him, he collapsed. Not out of fear, but in appreciation of the following fact that the people he was going to destroy were the people whose life and company he would prefer to have. He thought, in their absence, my life will be empty. How can I destroy my own family, my own kith and kin? These are the very people who are standing in front of me. How can I destroy all of these people? Most of the people Arjuna saw were citizens of this great kingdom. They had all been conscripted by Duryodhana, given a crash training course, and then brought to the battlefield. It was all visible because of their dress. They did not know how to button the shirts of their uniforms properly, and their walk was clumsy because of the heavy, unfamiliar military boots. They were obviously new recruits who had come to be fodder for Arjuna's arrows. Not only were there so many citizens in the opposite camp, but on his own side too, there were a lot of innocent people. Arjuna then understood that no one was going to be victorious in this war. Because Arjuna and his brothers were committed to the moral order, dharma, they did what was to be done and avoided what was not to be done. A word once spoken was fulfilled, and their actions were always beyond questions. Their life, therefore, was lived according to this dharma, whereas in the case of Duryodhana and his brothers, with the exception of Vikarna, it was quite the opposite. They followed a life which was questionable, adharmika. So the fight now was between dharma and adharma, between justice and injustice. This battle is also sometimes interpreted as representing a conflict within the physical body, the body having been brought into being by certain type of dharma, good actions. In this interpretation, the body is called dharma kshetra, kshetra meaning place. Knowledge of right and wrong is universal. If the physical body is considered a dharma kshetra, then kurukshetra is your own mind in which there are conflicts between dharma and adharma. What is to be done and what is not to be done? What is proper and what is not proper? These things you already know, of course, because you have certain innate sense about them. No one can plead ignorance of what is right and wrong. This knowledge is universal. What do we mean by universal knowledge here? All monkeys, for example, born to live on treetops, need to know something about the law of gravity, and they do. If you were to observe the mother monkey, you would see that she has no concern about whether there is a baby holding on to her as she jumps from tree to tree. The baby monkey, however, holds on its mother's bosom for its dear life. It is definitely afraid of falling, whereas the mother is not. She just keeps leaping from one branch to another while her baby holds on tight. Suppose the baby monkey had to undergo some education to know that there is a law of gravity operating, that it must hold on tightly in order not to fall, and that if it did fall, it would be injured or it would die. If all of these things had to be taught to monkeys, many of them would die for want of education, and the species itself would sooner or later become extinct. Fortunately, every baby monkey, without being educated, seems to know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Without going to Harvard or Cornell, without joining the moral majority, it knows very well that I will fall if I let go of my mother. I will fall is one piece of truth, and if I fall, I may hurt myself is the second piece of truth the monkey seems to know. The third piece of truth is, to fall and get hurt or be killed is not good for me or for my species. Instinctively, then the monkeys knows all this. Since monkeys are made to live on treetops, the minimum knowledge every monkey must have in order to survive is to know, I will fall, objects come down, I will be the victim if I do not hold on to the other branch when I leap. This knowledge must be given to monkeys along with the creation. Only then is there any hope of a monkey living its life on the treetops. Such knowledge is instinctive and is what we call the creation. If that knowledge is not given to a monkey and it has to be educated in order to know how to survive, then we can say that there is a defect in the creation. Similarly, as a human being, I am born with a faculty of choice. Unlike a monkey, however, I can choose to live on treetops or on the 20th floor of a building in Manhattan or in a cottage on some riverbank. I can choose to go to Alaska or keep only my nose out, or I can live in the tropics. Because I have the faculty of choice, I can choose my course of action. I can choose various ends and various means to achieve those ends. That a human being seeks securities and pleasure is a common fact that we have already analyzed. And in seeking these ends, they have to follow certain means to achieve them. More often than not, upon analysis, we find that the problems lie only in the means and not in the ends. For example, the desire for money, an end, is not a sin. In fact, if we seek money, Lord Vishnu will be very happy about it, knowing that his wife Lakshmi, the goddess of wealth, is so popular. The security that money represents is a natural need perceived by all human beings. Seeking security is natural. People seek different forms of security. In itself, this seeking is neither good nor bad, only natural. The means alone is what is important here. If you are controlled by a set of instincts, then you need not think about whether the means you employ is right or wrong. If you live in India and leave a couple of bananas on the window sill and a monkey comes along and takes them away, you cannot say the monkey is a thief. At the most, you can say that you were careless. When you know there are monkeys around, you have to keep certain things away from them. Whatever a monkey does, that action cannot be labeled as wrong because it is controlled by its own instincts. So the monkey is always right and is not responsible for what it does. This is what is meant by svabhava, one's own nature. Only when there is a choice is there right and wrong. Wherever choice is involved, you cannot avoid the concept of right and wrong. There can be proper choice and improper choice. Now, if this knowledge of what is proper and improper is to be given to you by an educational institution, it will definitely be denied to a lot of people, thereby making it possible for them to destroy themselves. Just as the monkey is given an instinctive knowledge of gravitation for its survival, so too a human being is given a common sense knowledge with reference to what is good and not good for him or her. No institution is required to teach such knowledge. That I should not get hurt, for example, is a piece of knowledge. A mother and father need not teach this common sense knowledge to their child because the child already knows it. So when I know I should not get hurt, I also understand that, like me, everyone else is aware of this fact. I also know exactly what is expected of me by others. I do not expect you to hurt me just as you do not expect me to hurt you. No one needs to be taught this knowledge because I have to choose. This knowledge is not left to education. It must be known to me. When I choose a means of action or perform an action, I must necessarily see whether it will hurt me or hurt anyone else or anything else. Knowledge of this moral order is what we mean when we say knowledge is born of common sense. A moral order is known to you, that you do not want to be robbed and that no one else wants to be robbed is a very well known fact. You do not want to be cheated or deceived, nor does anyone else want to be cheated or deceived by you. You do not want to be the target of anyone's anger, hatred, or jealousy. You also know very well that no one wants to be the target of yours. To put it positively, you want others to sympathize with you, to understand you, and others also want you to understand them. You want others to help you when you are in trouble. Others also want your help when they are in trouble. There are many values involved in a moral order: non-injury, ahimsa, absence of deception, speaking the truth, compassion, sharing, absence of jealousy, absence of hatred, and so on, all of which are connected to each other. With reference to the behavior of others, we are very clear. So this particular knowledge is with all of us and is gathered by common sense. No education is necessary to know what is right and wrong. Duryodhana had this knowledge and so did the Pandavas. However, problems arise because of our priorities, which is why we settle for compromises.